Welcome, James Sanders. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on to the podcast, Roland Chidiac Connects, where I connect with educators to talk about the motivation and the inspiration behind the amazing work you do. So thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to join me.
Oh, thanks, Roland, for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So what I usually do at the beginning of the podcast is I tell the listeners how I have a connection with the guests. So basically, I don't know you personally. I've never formally met you, which is unfortunate, and I hope along the way I'll have that opportunity. But I've been following you on Twitter, and I remember you back in the day when you were, I don't want to say a new Google certified teacher, but you were already into it. You were doing some work for EdTech team. You were tweeting out about the work that you were doing. And over the past, I don't know, maybe 2 years, you know, you've discovered, you founded Breakout EDU. You started a vlog. And so I've always kind of been fascinated by your story. And when I did my first podcast about wanting to podcast and the whole purpose behind what I wanted to do, in the very first one, I don't know if you heard it or not, and if you haven't heard it, it's okay because it sounds really bad, but you were one of the people I mentioned in my first episode of people that I would love to interview and talk to about motivation and inspiration. So for you to come on and be the 14th guest of the podcast, I'm very honored and very appreciative. So thank you for that. That's how I know you. So
fantastic. Maybe congrats on getting to 14. I know that this is not hard and not easy. This takes a lot of work. So congrats on sticking with it through this far.
Yeah, thanks. School just started this week, so I was really pumped that I could keep the momentum going by talking to you in my first week of school. So it's fitting. It's almost like you're helping me stay energized as I come home completely exhausted from work. But that's for another day, right?
Right.
I'd really appreciate it if you could tell us about your background in education.
Yeah. So long story short, I started in a classroom in 2010 down in Los Angeles, teaching there. And to keep it brief, I was in my third year at a charter school in South LA called KIPP Los Angeles. And for whatever reason, Google decided that they wanted to try to make a Chromebook, a computer, right? They'd never done that before. And, you know, as luck would have it, they chose my little school as the first place to test Chromebooks in the wild. And my school, like many, were skeptical of, you know, just throwing technology into the classroom. And they said, okay, why not give it to the mediocre history teacher at the end of the hall, because it's not math or English. And so it's kind of a safe place to test something in medieval history. And so I got these computers, and as luck would have it, got to be the first to teach one-to-one with Chromebooks, and started a relationship with Google then. And been on this kind of wacky journey in ed tech ever since. Was able to help Google launch Chromebooks about 6 months afterwards, and then ended up taking actually a part-time role at Google on the YouTube team, overseeing the K-12 content curation and all of the videos related to K-12. Just so much fun. I moved up to the Bay Area to be closer to the company, and ended up starting my first company in 2012 with a woman named Esther Wojcicki. We started a company called Class Badges. And we sold our company in early 2014. And then I left to work in Washington, took a government job as a White House Presidential Innovation Fellow. Did that for my tenure, or my tour of duty, as we call it. And then after that, came out and joined the EdTech team, and then later Breakout. So it's been kind of a wacky ride. I didn't, you know, none of it had been planned, and, you know, I'm definitely a firm believer of, you know, why not give it a try, and, you know, and if it fails, try something differently, and just, you know, jump at the next opportunity, kind of this make your own luck type stuff. So, yeah.
Very cool. Thanks for providing us with that background. I do want to take you back to the beginning, though. Tell us what got you into teaching. What motivated you to become a teacher in the first place?
Yeah, so I was doing student government in college at Western Washington University, and as any college student looking for a summer job, and something that popped up on the job list was this teaching assistant on a at a tribal school, the Lummi Nation up there in Western Washington. And my best friend and I ended up taking, jobs as like, it's better than the gardening work that we were doing and like something fun. And we both loved, kickball as a kid. And we said, why not? And I, started working on the reservation as a teaching assistant all summer and just fell in love with it. And the reservations in our country are a place that often get forgotten. And it was, kind of serendipitous that that's where I started in the classroom, and being able to see at the same time both learn about education as well as, what I think of as a travesty as far as what we've done to create these environments where they don't have the support that they need, and it's just basically like a forgotten people. And so being thrust into that culture from the beginning, really opened my eyes to some of the, what I ignorantly thought of as problems abroad really are problems at home, and got really passionate about teaching, and then ended up taking a job in LA when I finished my history degree. As part of LA had at the time this teaching credentialing program type stuff through the LMU, the Loyola Marymount University, and started teaching right away, and fell in love with the opportunity. And if even though the roles have changed over the number of years, and I've only been involved in education directly for about 10 years, it's all the same, wanting to look at the problem from as many different perspectives as possible. And that's been kind of, the one common thread through all of the different pit stops on my short career so far.
Yeah, it sounds like a really rich way to get in. I mean,
Yeah,
working.
yeah.
Yeah, like it sounds like, not everybody has that experience. I've heard a few of those types of stories where people get in that way, working with people who are, I want to use the word marginalized, but when you talk about your Indigenous people, it reminds me of our Canadian Native people as well. And it's like, as you're talking about it, I can make a connection to the way that this my country has treated them as well, and what we're doing now to try and make things right. And so that's very honorable. I just learned that about you. I didn't know that that's how you started, and that's very inspiring in and of itself to keep moving in education. And then when you went out to LA, what kind of school were you working out of in
Yeah,
LA?
so I started out in a traditional Los Angeles Unified school. It was a large school in Carson, Compton, California area, right on the border there. And I thought that's where I was going to be for a number of years. But at the time, this was 2009, 2008, they decided to lay off all the new teachers. I don't know if you guys remember this, and I don't know if the news got up there, but here in the U.S., there was, this, layoff crisis, pink slip thing that happened in LAUSD. And I was a part of it, and part of those teachers let off just because I didn't have enough years experience to earn tenure or whatever. And that's what, forced my hand to move over to a charter school. I had never really taken a stance at the time on like charters versus public. It was, I lost my job here, there's a job there. And that's what kind of got me on that path.
Okay, very neat too. I enjoy this, the establishing of the foundation of who James Sanders is as an educator, because
Yeah.
it's important to hear the history and the path that people have taken to get to where they are today. So you're working for, okay, so what kind of work did you do as a Presidential Innovation Fellow at the White House? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, so at the time, I was in the second cohort or the second class of fellows. There was 41 of us. I was the only one with direct classroom or education experience, and so I was assigned to work with the Department of Education here in the U.S. on a variety of projects. So worked closely with a great guy named Richard Culotta, who was the director of education technology, and worked on a variety of different projects. It was funny because my background had been all K-12, but the first project I took on was one related to the president's post-secondary work. So around wanting to, here in the U.S., there's this three major problems. One is the college debt, you know, the debt that we have for people, loans and whatnot. And then also just the fact that, you know, a lot of times student aid is awarded based on hours that you're willing to sit in a seat rather than what you're actually learning. And so what the president wanted to do was test some different models. So I was, you know, on a part of a large team that were developing those policies and those strategies around, you know, working with schools that are doing something different around rewarding aid based on learning rather than seat time, and working with to make it easier for students to apply for federal aid through this, you know, process called FAFSA, and trying to open up that tool to make it a little bit easier to use. And so that was the kind of the main focus. But immediately was, as kind of a, will be a theme throughout, is always looking for kind of a fun side project, something to scratch that itch. And so, you know, as a K-12 educator who had a passion for video at the time, I wanted to kind of pick something up. And so I pulled up the Rolodex, you know, the virtual one, and figured out whom at the White House was involved on the president's digital team, and, you know, started, you know, having people make an intro and, you know, the classic try to get the foot in the door, and went down and met with the video folks. And this, the president has a small team of video folks, three people. And we chatted and decided that we wanted to do a film festival together. And so we created the White House Student Film Festival and asked students around the U.S. to create videos describing how they use technology in the classroom, and wanted and got thousands of responses from U.S. students, and held a film festival featuring the best ones. And it's now in its, I think it just wrapped up its third year, or it's somewhere in its third year right now. And it's been a lot of fun to see that program grow. And so that was kind of my first major side project in Washington.
Was it very difficult to get a job there?
So the application process actually was a kind of a fun one. They did something a little bit differently there. It was and I, you know, coming from the classroom and having only a little bit of experience outside of it in the education technology space, didn't really thought it was way out of my territory, but decided to put an application anyways. And it was this one where you submit two links that people can find you online, and like it's basically two paragraphs about why you want to do this, and that's it. And put it in, and then once I got to the interview process, you know, tried to communicate my passion for taking risks and trying new things, and was able to get sneak in there. But definitely a fraud, right? I don't definitely deserve it.
I doubt that. But have you always been someone who has taken risks? And it sounds to me like when you get involved in something, you look for the fun side of it. And so, it, like to me, having never met you before, but I mean, it doesn't sound like it's hard to take risks when you're looking for the fun aspects of things, or you're making things fun. Is that something that you've always kind of been about?
Yeah. I definitely would categorize myself as a 0-to-1 person. I like seeing if there can be something. And then, you know, a lot of times we've all been in conversations with friends where we're like, oh, what if this, what if that? What I like to do is pick the one that I'm most what if question I'm excited about and test it and see if it does work, right? And asking why not. And, you know, more often than not, it was a not. It didn't work. But then, you know, okay, well then try something different. So there's, you know, constantly floating around in my head, like I'm sure many of us have, ideas of like, wouldn't it be cool if, and then always trying to figure out which of those ifs I want to test next.
So would you say that the motivation for a lot of the things you do come from your what if questions that you decide to test out?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so like, what if there was, a some sort of video type events where students were involved, and even just starting with, you know, what we call putting some clay on the wheel to get us thinking a little bit around like, what is that? And then saying, okay, like in working with a team or at least a friend or two to try to form that up. So with every single project, you know, I'm most definitely not a lone ranger. It's, you know, a series of, you know, people where I'm like, hey man, like, what about this? Or, and like, oh, let's try that. And so, and, you know, I think having that, you know, a partner in crime, so to speak, is what makes that easier to take that leap. Right. And to try something a little bit bigger than if we were just working alone.
Okay, so that's a perfect segue into Breakout EDU for a couple of reasons. Number one, the what ifs. I'm itching to find out if that was a what if question and how it came to be. And then I know that Mark Hammonds and Jeffrey Humphreys were part of the Breakout EDU. You'll have to forgive me if there are other people involved that I don't know of. But I remember early on when I was hearing about Breakout EDU, it was James Sanders. I know Mark was creating the boxes in his garage. I've seen lots of pictures, and I knew. Then I hit up Jeffrey Humphreys right away, a fellow Canadian maple syrup EDU folk, and I said, how do I get in on this? Like, how can I get myself a box? Yeah. And then that's when he said, you know, it's slowly moving in that direction, and I'm building boxes like crazy, and I can't keep up. And from there, it's grown into what it is. So I want to talk a little bit about Breakout EDU and how that story about how you guys just came up with this idea and then went with it.
Yeah. So it's a pretty fun story. So it was Edmonton. We were at an event, a conference, and we were looking for something fun to do. And I don't remember who suggested it, but a few of us had done those escape room things before, you know, these places where you can get locked in a room and you try to figure out how to get out. And, you know, somebody threw out the idea, I don't remember whom, of like, let's go do one of those. And so we piled in the vans and we broke up into two groups. And I was in a group with Kern Kelly and some of his students from Maine. There's a lot of other folks there, including, remiss to name them all, but Michael Wacker, Chris Scott, Kim Randall, I forgot, there's a few others, Nick Michelle Armstrong. And we went and did this, and it was pretty surprising. We were playing one of the rooms, and I think it probably hit all of us simultaneously, but I'll speak from my perspective, watching Kern students solve puzzles and their excitement and their engagement around these puzzles that weren't too different than ones that we hoped they would solve in class. The only difference here is they paid money, their own money, to go solve this stranger's problems. And we can't, you know, make it fun enough in class to get them to do it. What's that gap there? And there was a kind of light bulbs going off. And so Michael Wacker, who's the chief learning officer at EdTech Team, and myself, after those experiences, decided to literally take an entire day off work. And we sat in a conference room at a hotel for hours, really, you know, writing the blueprint for what Breakout EDU was, including name and concept and mapping out a whole myriad of what we thought is, you know, possibilities, and most of which have, you know, kind of come to fruition through lots of testing and hard work and teamwork. And that was the start of it. And so got back home, my first call after, you know, sketching it out with Michael was to Mark Hammonds. He's probably the biggest doer I know. And we were doing it originally with plastic toolboxes, and it was his idea to shift to a wooden box. His father-in-law, former shop teacher, built the first ones. And we were off to the races. And Michael, because of his full-time job as a chief learning officer at EdTech Team, you know, remained focused on his job and would help us in his 20% time. And, you know, I dove in. One thing that I learned from past projects is if you're not fully committed to it, it won't ever grow to its, you know, fullest potential. And it was a hard lesson through previous projects where I'm like, oh, I can just do this in my evenings or whatever. And this was finally an opportunity where I didn't have a full teaching load or things like that, that I could devote, you know, all my attention to something as wacky as Breakout. And so was able to explain to Mark Wagner, the CEO of EdTech Team, that this was an idea that we believed in, and we decided to start the company internally as a incubated project. So, like, you know, kind of EdTech Team at the time wasn't set up to be an incubator, but we made it so, and incubated the company. So just like any accelerator or incubator, the new company operates on its own and has its own, you know, ideas and mission and culture, but was able to use the shell of the incubating organization to grow and to foster. And it's actually just now fully spinning out. So my last day is with any formal relationship with that tech team is the end of this month. And so October 1st, we're 100% on our own, and it's its own thing.
The story to me is fascinating. I love the Canadian content, Edmonton, and some of the Canadian educators who are operating with EdTech team. Yeah. I love the Michael Wacker connection, because Michael was my first taste of what EdTech team is at a one day summit, I guess you could call it, down the road close to Toronto a couple of years ago. So I ended up meeting him after, and when I told him that it was him that kind of got me sucked into all this stuff, was somebody sitting beside him at the registration desk called it the Wacker experience. And I think whenever they see me around, they'll joke around about that. But I love the way that you explained the very basic beginnings of it and how it kind of propelled itself into what it is today, because I think a lot of people, they see something big like Breakout EDU, and they don't always think about the creative aspect of it, or the teamwork or the collaboration and the commitment that goes into making something like that function. Mm-hmm. And you even said, like, has been working, but you've tried other things, other what if questions that have not come to fruition. So I appreciate you taking the time to explain the foundation of it, how it has come to be, because I tell you, like, I'm on Facebook often, and, you know, every third or fourth item I see on Facebook is something to do with Breakout EDU. And it's like, it's just every day it's growing, and I can't even keep up with it anymore. So when I go to that page, I have to pick and choose what I'm going to read about, depending on, you know, what my plans are in my classroom and things like that, because it's so big. There are so many people doing different things and constantly providing different ideas and bits and pieces here and there. So I think that the culture you've created, especially on Facebook, is wonderful, and the collaboration is great, and the way that you and the people who are working on it, the way you communicate to us and keep us updated and offer us a lot of content to help us with our teaching is wonderful. So again, I'm so excited to be able to talk to you about how it started and for people to hear about your motivation and inspiration along the way. For anybody who's got their what ifs, and to hear James Sanders talk about his what ifs and how he kind of works through them.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and thank you for letting me share that.
Problem. Tell us about your vlog, because I remember your vlog when it was just starting, and I remember it was so cool, and I think I mentioned it in the first podcast when I was reflecting on wanting to speak to you. I was in your vlogs. I love the way, I thought it was awesome that even though you edited your work, you still left in a lot of the mistakes or the bits and pieces. Like, you'd share your goals with us and your vision, and then in the next episode, you'd say, "Yeah, I'm failing at this. Like, I need to fix something now." Where most people would cut that right out and only show the good stuff. You were showing us the good, bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the project. It started it in January, January 1st, and wanted to do 300. Was able to get to, I think, 125 before I stopped. So didn't complete it. I'm still, you know, every day thinking about, you know, restarting it. And loved it. I was watching, so it was 100% stolen / inspired by the Casey Neistat and a few of the other vloggers. But I spent a good part of 2015 watching his vlog, and towards the end of 2015 decided that I wanted to do one, and knowing that I didn't make a video until January, started mentally creating them on October and November. You know, saying, like, if I was filming today, what would I be filming? And the vlogs are kind of a double-edged sword. Like, I love having that archive, but also it's always a camera being present. So it's kind of this balance that I would have to strike in my day, but I was traveling a lot of the time, and it was fun to capture that those stories. And I would spend a few hours in the evening editing it before putting up the next day. And I miss it. I haven't vlogged for a couple months, and you know, keep telling myself that someday I'll start again. I am really, really passionate about video in general, as you know. But that project is unfortunately on hold. And one of the areas where it was going to is this idea that I think there's going to be or needs to be some sort of, you know, like thinking about vlogs today and what a better version of a vlog could look like in a classroom type learning experience as both a consumption and a community type aspect. And so that was one of the ideas that I was going to, or what ifs that I was going to start to test, but then the demands of Breakout just got so big and needed to, you know, shelve that and pour 100% of my time into Breakout EDU. But, you know, it's still there. It's still rattling around in my head, the idea of like, you know, and it definitely will be the next project that I take on once I do have a 10% or 20% time to give to that, dedicated to digital citizenship and trying to work on the problem of kids' understanding of how other kids live in the world and, you know, learning that way. So
that's really cool that you would give us that little tidbit that comes out of the work that you were doing with your vlog. And I just had a thought. Are you familiar with Gary Vaynerchuk?
Mm-mm. I think I recognize the name. Yeah, I recognize the name as written. I've never actually heard it pronounced, but I see it all the time on Twitter.
Okay, yeah, so Gary's an entrepreneur and he's a bunch of other things, but he has someone who follows him all the time, basically recording him. And so he's got a vlog that's constantly evolving. Like, he's got somebody that follows him around. So I was just thinking, when Breakout EDU gets really big and the financial component of it is like over the top, then maybe you can hire somebody to follow you around and basically record your comings and goings.
No, that's definitely not for me. I'm a fan of filming my own stuff. Yeah, if you look, I have my drone is right over there as well. I love the stuff, but I bookmarked it. If you heard me typing to check this guy out.
I didn't hear that, but he's, for me, he's a motivational speaker. I mean, I'm an educator, and yet I listen to what he talks about and some of the things he says, and then I take and I roll it into my practice as an educator, particularly around communication with parents. I feel like, you know, he's a marketing expert. He's an entrepreneur. He's done a lot of things. He's got some businesses that are huge because of his philosophy and the way he operates. So I'm, you know, one of my philosophies of teaching, just of life, is to take the best of any discipline, whatever it is, it has to offer, and then sticks and how you can roll it into what you do. So he's one aspect of the many people I listen to and follow to try to take the best from them and roll it into me and who I am and what I can do with my kids. So
I think that's so smart, like looking to non-educators for inspiration. I think that's, you know, where I think a lot of people get stuck in this rut of trying to, or not necessarily a rut, but an echo chamber of this world of ed tech. And it's when you get out of it that you start to really find some stuff that is intriguing, right? So I think that's super smart.
Yeah, I think ed tech is awesome community, lots of amazing people, but I think once you get rolling into it, it is important to take a step back and listen to other people, especially the people who maybe aren't in favor of ed tech, and listening to their position. I think your position can only become more valuable once you have a full picture of the both sides of the story. And from there, you can continue to form your own philosophy and then use your practice to inform your future practice. So yeah, I think it's cyclical, and it's important for people to keep that in mind. But I'm going to move away from me now and back to you, because this is the podcast where I connect with people, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to connect with James Sanders. So awesome. I'm going to continue. Yeah, I'm very jealous of your drone. I really like your drone. it's a good one, and I hope to have something like that one day. But is so big that you had to stop vlogging, which is sad because for people like me, it inspires me. I look for my inspiration from the people around me, like educators. I'm trying to move away from these really popular celebrity type people, so to speak, because I believe that people like you and I and other educators have a lot to offer each other. And so part of the mission of this podcast is to grab the best from the people in my profession, and hopefully I can branch out. But you're providing us with a lot of great information. Selfishly, I'm taking a lot of it for myself, but I'm hoping that the listeners to the podcast are able to get a better feeling of who you are, so that when they read your tweets or they go to YouTube and they watch your vlogs, Breakout EDU, they think of James Sanders as more than just this amazing educator, but also a person who's living a life and who's motivated by different things and has a lot going on and wants to keep trying new things. So this brings me then to where I like to call it the final word. People come up to you and they tell you that they're just not feeling motivated. They have no inspiration. They don't know where to start. What would you say to those people to help them find their motivation or to find their inspiration?
Yeah. So that's a great question. And how people get started, I think, is a very personal thing. And, you know, everybody has their own process. And, you know, one thing that's nice about the internet these days is there's a lot of people out there talking about, you know, their process and getting started. For me, I subscribe to the Austin Kleon manual of Show Your Work. So if you haven't read it, I put read in quotes. There's a it's like a really short book. I'll grab my copy right here. Called Show Your Work. It's by Austin Kleon, and he talks about just process and how to get started. And one of the messages that's simplest to understand, and I use it in any of my talks, and I'll see if I can find the page, is looking for the smallest increment of progress. So thinking about your year, rather than thinking about the end of the year, think about the year as 365 individual days. And rather than saying, this is where I want to be in a year, ask yourself, you know, what do I want to finish today? And by compiling each of those days into a, I'll show the two things for the people that are listening. I'm showing like one X on the screen. This is today. And if you do something on one day, a month looks like that, which is, you know, 30 X's on a page. And then a year, you know, you can get a whole lot done if you think about it, of each day as one small increment. And so, you know, I'll ask myself, for example, one of the projects that we wanted to do for Breakout are these things called reflection cards. And we want to think about the Breakout EDU process and the learning experience as a full cycle. And right now, it kind of ends, and there's this debate around what goes in the box and things like that. And we wanted to complete it. And as a team, we decided that a deck of cards that have reflection questions on it and, you know, cool ways you can use them is the way to go. And so thinking about, okay, what is the first step? And it's like, okay, look, coming up with some questions. And it's literally just writing down on a piece of paper some questions. And then, you know, working through the process, okay, now we want to refine those questions. And so I did a community hangout last week where I invited, you know, whomever wanted to join from the community to chat with us about questions. And then the next step was formalizing the list of questions. And then the next day is having Adam do the back cover art of the card, and then figuring out how the heck do you print thousands of decks of cards, and doing internet search for, you know, who prints cards and, you know, what does that cost and whatnot. And so thinking about it, the end result will be decks of cards that you can use to facilitate awesome discussions after a Breakout EDU game. But it starts with just scribbling down on a piece of paper one of the questions that you want to include in that. And that's the same thing with Breakout. You know, when we started that project, it started with, you know, all sorts of different locks, and we knew we wanted to lock something. We didn't want to invest in any boxes or anything like that, so we used a backpack and placed a lock on it and, you know, created a game. Okay, the game where we should probably create a website, you know, and just thinking about all of those different steps. And, you know, Breakout EDU isn't this, you know, giant thing that just popped into existence. You know, it's a collection of a lot of really tiny things. But because every day we do something else or add something else to it or refine it or work on it or fix it, it turns into, you know, something substantial. And that's like any project, is just finding that smallest unit and saying, okay, I'm putting that on my to-do list today and I'm going to get it done. And it might just be, you know, buying the domain name and then putting something on that or whatever it is. But that's how I think about getting started. And you can't force yourself to do something if you're not excited about it. I think the biggest message of anything is to share with anybody listening to this. If you're listening to this, they're obviously passionate about the potential for technology or just an educator that has an entrepreneurial mindset. And it's coming to the realization that, and this is, I'm stealing a quote from Steve Jobs, that the world is something that can be changed, and everything in the world was made up by people no smarter than us. And if you want, you know, you can choose to live within that world that somebody else invented, or you can ask yourself, like, what world do I want to live in? And if that's the case, what can I do to poke it and change it and try something a little bit differently? And I'll ping you the actual link to the video that Steve Jobs, you know, said. That's, you know, his words, not mine. But I believe in that. And that's kind of the message that I think teachers need to hear is, you know, your classroom is a construct of a lot of, you know, unimaginative white guys in suits describing or deciding what education should be. And if you want it to be something different, and if you're not like that, try to figure out where can you start to experiment, you know, when within those rules and bend them a little bit, right? I mean, especially if you have protection in your job, you know, you can afford a strike or two before you're in real trouble, and try to start to do something a little bit different and try to take some risks. So yeah, I think that's the message that I'd like to communicate.
For sure. Well, thank you for that. It's great advice. Basically, you know, as I heard you talking about it, I took some notes, and what struck me is that it's a great mindset to have, and that's a great book. And I'm glad that you talked about it, Show Your Work by Austin Kleon. Mm-hmm. You know, starting with small increments, it's very doable for people, especially busy teachers who constantly have things added onto their plate. I love the concept. I've never heard of the book, but very manageable. And just listening to you talk about it is inspiring. And so I could see you motivating people, or people becoming motivated by taking your advice about starting small and looking at the big picture and then breaking it up into smaller chunks, because it's just like you said, any endeavor as it grows, you're constantly iterating, you're constantly trying new things, you're taking it one piece at a time. Nobody's dealing with anything at a whole level, right? Mm-hmm. So that's great. I've not heard anything like that before. So once again, we've got some great content for the people listening, because if they've heard the other podcast episodes, they will know that nobody has said anything like this before. So this is good for us.
Well, thank you so much, Roland, for having me on. It's been a pleasure, and I can't wait to hear some future episodes.
And a shout out to Jeff Humphreys, because heard the first episode, and he said to me, have you connected with James? And I said, no, we haven't connected yet. So thank you to Jeffrey for reaching out to you and kind of, you know, letting you know that this is happening and whether you'd be interested. So I know this is a big risk for you as well, and I do appreciate you taking that risk. But I have to say that you taking the time to talk to me, someone you've never met before, about this topic, I hope that it's a good model for other people to go after what they want to go after for the right reasons, and to have faith in people, because ultimately all the people that have sat down and spoken to me have put faith in me, you know, that I would provide an honest at this interview type thing, and that I would respect their wishes and their time. So I hope you feel the same way. And as soon as this is ready, I'll let you know. And I look forward to seeing your progress with Breakout, and I look forward even more to seeing the cool new things that you do as time goes on. Oh, and by the way, congratulations on getting married recently.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Working on that project too.
Yeah. That's a big one. Welcome to the club.
Yeah, right. All right, Roland. Well, you have a great evening, and we'll chat soon.
God or fell off, I'm still hot, knock your shell off. My money stacked fat, plus I can't turn the swell off. The franchise doing big business, I live this, it's automatic, I win this. So you hear those horns, you finish. A soldier, and I stay under you fighting. Plus I'm storming on you chumps like I'm thunder and lightning. Ain't no way you breaking me, kid, I'm harder than nails. Plus I keep it on lock like I'm